You're listening to the Camp Nation podcast. Find us online at campnation.ca.
Welcome to the Camp Nation podcast number 11, the one with all the brothers and sisters. Today's episode features our discussion on year-round schooling with special guest Dan Richards, who was a camp director from New Zealand. Hope you enjoy. Good day and welcome to the Camp Nation 11 for the third week of May 2010. My name is Joe Richards. I'm the summer camp director at Pierce Williams Christian Center, which is a United Church summer camp in southwestern Ontario. The other hosts for today are...
Well, my name is Gabrielle, and I am one of the directors at Camp Oro, up in the Laurentians in Quebec. I'm very happy to be here with you guys today.
My name is Dan Richards. I'm Joe's brother, and I am currently a agricultural sales rep with John Deere at McGrail Farm Equipment in Chatham, formerly a United Church camp director at Lambton Center in Forest, and I was camp manager at Camp Columba in New Zealand.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us today, Dan.
You're welcome. People,
you'll figure out why we asked Dan to join us in a second. That's our discussion. But we'll quickly just go through some links. So, Dan, why don't you give us your link first? Tell us a bit about it and why you picked it.
Picked a link to Camp Ladybug will help busy women relax and recharge from news, the daily item. And I picked it because I think it's indicative of where summer camps trends are going, where we have to offer programs for more than just kids at camp. And it's an emerging market. I know there's lots of camps that do women's weekends, and actually Kenesari Camp, United Church Camp in Ridgetown that I'm on the board of directors for, we're offering a women's weekend this fall for the first time. So I just thought it was interesting to find an article on that today, and I thought I'd share it.
That's excellent.
Great. And I know that Oprah had a big weekend just this past weekend. She had a big 10th anniversary of her magazine, and a whole bunch of women flew in, including my mom, to New York, and had this huge women's weekend, basically with Oprah and all of the friends. But it's starting to become a big business. I think people are seeing that.
Well, and sort of here's the question: I get that it's big business, but you don't see a ton of men's weekends.
No.
And I wonder if there is. I wonder why that is.
I know from our women's weekends, even though there are a lot of women's weekends, I think a lot of women feel like they don't really have time to themselves. And I don't know if men have that similar feeling, you know, that's possible. But I know that a lot of women feel like they don't have time to themselves to relax or just to step away for a little bit. And I think that's why these women's weekends are becoming very popular. It's really about, my mom said that women go nuts for anything. They got like a stick of lip gloss in one of their bags, and the women were like, oh my goodness, lip gloss, and everybody's putting it on. They're so excited. So I'm not quite sure, but maybe men's weekends are the next new thing.
I think probably one of the reasons is because traditionally people see men as having their deer hunting, their moose hunting, their bear hunting, their ice fishing weekends, and that women feel men already have their time away, or their road trips to see football games, or all these things that are kind of traditional male areas, and women don't feel they have that same time away.
Huh. That's interesting. Hey, so my link is actually, I found an article called How Safe Is Your Child's Summer Camp? And this is an article to a site in Florida. It was hard for me to pull up today. My connection didn't seem to be pulling it. It takes a long time. But the essence of the article is that it goes over how summer camps aren't regulated and how only four camps in that particular area that the article's written about are accredited by the American Camping Association. And I think this is the type of article that something like a local camping association has to get behind to really promote the value of being an accredited camp. Because it goes into how do you know that your children's counselors are safe? How do you know that they've had a police records checked on all of those things? So it's a fairly hardcore approach, but it's the same questions I ask consistently of parents. I say, you know, you're sending your kids to, you know, a day camp that is a drama camp. Well, how do you know it's safe? Well, I know the people who run it. Well, how well do you know the people who run it? How well do you know the counselors who work there? You know, what safeties do they have in place?
And I think it's so interesting Joe, when you say, well, I know the people that run there, if we look at a hospital and you say, you know, there's an accredited hospital, a non-accredited hospital, well, I know Sam that works at this. No problem. Well, what kind of schooling has he gone to, or what kind of, it's very similar to camps, you know, there's a lot of education, and there's a lot of training that goes into camps, and some of the non-accredited camps, not that they don't do that, but they don't have to do it. I think that's a wonderful article to have.
Yeah. I think it would piss a lot of people off who aren't accredited camps, but I think if we're going to educate parents about the value of accreditation, this is the type of article that's going to really do it. Gab, did you have an article?
My article, or my link, is from the Globe and Mail, and it's written by Andy Berry. And for those of you that are CBC sort of warriors, you know him from probably the radio show called Radio Metro Morning. And he wrote this great article called Summer Camp Launched My Career. And he basically starts it off as saying he wasn't the best athlete at camp. I think he actually says, I was the worst athlete at camp. But camp found a place for him, and it was basically in broadcasting at his camp to announce certain things, and his camp counselor really, you know, saw what was special in him and fostered that. So I think that people should probably tweet this link and get it connected to their website and all that.
Yeah, it's a great article. I had the privilege of seeing him read it live on stage at the Kids in Camp charity event, which was held in Toronto a few weeks ago. And it was it's a great article and a great story. He has some backstory that he didn't share in the article that he shared as well. So it's a really good read.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I read that a few weeks ago and really liked it. And when I was looking for an article today, I found another article that was a similar thing from a lady who went to camp. And one of the things she pointed out that I like what he pointed out too is camp has a place for the people that fit in and for the people that don't fit in anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent point to make. Did we get Dan Weir on the line?
I'm here.
Great.
Hi. Oh, Dan, welcome to podcast number 11. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm getting my teeth removed tomorrow. I'm getting wisdom teeth removed, so I haven't had any caffeine today. So I've been apparently lovely to deal with all day today.
I thought you were insinuating you were going to have your teeth pulled on the air,
would
have been awesome.
It's been a way cool podcast then.
No, but my wife is threatening to make a David after the dentist video with me.
That's awesome. So Dan Weir, meet Dan Richards. He's on the line. He's my older brother.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Dan.
And Dan, we're actually at your link.
Okay, great.
We've all done our links, and so hit us with your link.
Nice. My link was from Small Business Trends. It was banning social media doesn't work, education does. They had a statistic that 54% of companies that were banning social media previously this year decided not to, and so they gone down to 40% only banning social media at work. And a lot of it just talked about how you know, your employees are going to be going on social media at work. So you should just, instead of banning it completely, you should be coaching them and educating them on how they should be online and what's acceptable and what's not. And I thought this is really pertained not only to our summer employees, but our year-round employees as well, too, because there's definitely a lot of people that are representing camp all year long, just as much as our summer staff, and they really kind of need to kind of manage their selves in that.
That's cool.
It's an excellent article, and it makes a lot of great points, and I'm not sure how we're going to distinguish which Dan we're talking about when we're on this thing, but Brother Dan is what I'll call him. I was talking about – I was thinking about you at your job currently when I read through this.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that a lot of organizations don't see the value in it yet and aren't allowing social innovators to create that value so then they can say, hey, well, everybody should be on this.
Yeah, Facebook is banned at my work through a software. But, you know, the thing is, in the end, you can always find a way around it. So going on a tweet of Travis's a while ago, I tried Brizzly, and after a few stumbles, they fixed it, and now I can be on Facebook at work through Brizzly.
Nice.
So there's always awesome. A way around it.
Yeah.
That's the other problem.
That's awesome.
My wife has the same thing with her local school. I have to keep telling her different proxies she could use to check her Gmail and Facebook at work. So, but yeah.
That is an awesome link. So let's move straight into our discussion. And this week we're discussing year-round schooling and summer camp. To introduce it a little bit, I put this down a few weeks ago, and I had done some thinking and had tweeted some stuff about it. The fact that it is something that we need to think about now, because schools as a whole are moving towards this. This thought keeps coming up, and I think we have a very reactionary sense to it versus a well-thought-out plan for it. So when that came up, I did think about my brother Dan, who had directed a summer camp in New Zealand, and where they have year-round schooling. So why don't we let Dan tell us about New Zealand and how it worked down there? And because you, Dan, you had experienced camp here and camp there, tell us about the changes, the differences, and recruiting of campers, things of that nature.
Alrighty, so the school year in New Zealand runs in 4 10-week terms, and between each term there's a 2-week break. And so you run 10 weeks off to 10 to the last term, and then there's approximately a 6 or 7 week break that for them is in their summer, which is over the Christmas time. And so obviously the challenge for running camp in that kind of schooling year is that you need to adjust your camp schedule, because you have these natural breaks built into the year. And so what we did was we ran camp in 2 of those 3 2-week breaks. Another organization had for a long time, 50 years, rented the camp to use it in the winter break. And then we ran programs for 2 weeks of the summer break as well. And so one of the nice things about that is that if you can get committed campers, you only need to find enough to fill 2 sessions, and then you get them to come back to each session. I figured that we needed 1.5 times the number of campers to fill, because they all wouldn't send them every week. One of the challenges is that you have to plan for winter programming if you don't have somebody coming in to use it, which would be a real challenge here. Winter there gets cold, but not nearly as cold as here. And so that was one of the, I think, the big challenges. The other challenge in New Zealand was that in their summer, they don't think about sending their kids away. They go and they take like 4-week holidays. So that was a bit of a challenge too.
So in total, how many weeks do the kids have off?
They're 12 weeks over the course of 12 or 13, depending on how the calendar worked out over the course of the year. Because one of the weeks, they say 4 10-week term, but one of them turns into only be 9 weeks. So they get 13 weeks off, which is comparable to Ontario.
Right.
Yeah, when you count the Ontario school year, it's currently 12 weeks off. If you have 9 over the course of the summer, March break plus 2 weeks at Christmas. I think the reason I wanted to start the conversation is because I'd rather have people approach this from a what-if and a planning stage rather than a this can never happen. Because we all know that if a government chooses to do something, a government's going to choose to do it, and we're not going to have a whole lot of say unless we've planned it ahead. Does that make sense?
Yep.
You know, Dan, when I tweeted about this, Dan Weir had sent back you'd sent back a comment that you think you agree that part of it is just people afraid to change their business model.
Oh, definitely. I think, especially if you look at really great camps, great camps have a rich history of doing certain programs and having these traditions. And for, you know, any small change in their program sometimes can be a headache. And so when you hear all of a sudden your summer might be broken up into a few, 3 or 4 week stints, you know, they can't imagine what it would be like. To them, it's ruining the bond that a child will have. And I even see it when I'm at camp fairs and there's a camp there that's trying to pitch to a parent that they should only send their child to a 6 to 8 week camp instead of a 2 week camp like the one I work at. Because the bond they make over those 6 to 8 weeks is so much stronger than 2 weeks. And we get stuck in these molds of, you know, we have to do it this way because that's how it's always been. Not so much as we have to do this way because of this rule or because of this.
Well, and I think in the end it comes down to the same argument I have with camping standards at times, is that we as a camp community worry a lot about safety at camp, right? So there's standards for archery, there's standards for horseback riding, there's standards for high ropes and low ropes and everything in between. But the question we never ask is, what is good for the kids? Meaning, is it good for child development the way we have it currently set up? So are 8 weeks away from your family positive for the family environment, or is that positive for the, right? So what is the, what's the best method for forming good kids? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I think the other benefit that I didn't mention that I saw in the fact that you get these breaks over the course of the year is that you have more opportunity to develop stronger kind of connections to your camper families, because instead of only seeing them once every 10 months, you end up seeing them three or four times over the course of the year. And so you get a better opportunity to have a positive impact on the life of those campers, because they're at camp more often if they can afford it.
Do you think that you would have the same retention rate? Do you think that if, let's say there was 4 weeks in one period and then like 8 weeks later, another 4 weeks, do you think you would have a lot of kids doing both those 4 week sessions or just doing one?
I guess it would depend on the demographic and on what they could afford. But what we found in New Zealand was that about 50% would return to each time we offered camp programming.
Nice.
And then we had to work on finding another 50.
Yeah, and when Brother Dan and I talked about that, that's the thing that really floored me, right? So if I have 100 spots at camp, and I'm going to run a two-week camp, and I need to find 100 kids. Essentially, what Dan is saying, that if we run camp four times over the course of the summer, or over the course of the year, you would need to find 400 kids. But that's not true, because what you do is, if you have 50% return each of those 4 weeks, you only need to find 200 kids, not 400 every year, right? So your retention rate goes down significantly. Because if when you put summer camp all together in an 8 week program, and if you have 2 week sessions like you do, Dan, or I'm not sure, you know, if essentially they're going to come to 1 2 week session, but if you split that set, if you had a 2 week session in July and a 2 week session in, let's say, October, and a 2 week session in, let's say, March, they might very well attend three different 2 week sessions,
or even two of the three,
because parents, yeah.
And what is the, you know, we've been hearing about it for a very long time, you know, the possibility of school all year round. Does anybody have an idea in North America if there's any movement in that, or is it the same that it was like 5 or 10 years ago, that this is something that people are talking about? But I'm trying to think about teachers and how would teachers react to this idea. Maybe they're excited about it. Maybe they like their summer. Their summer vacation, but where are we at in North America? You know, realistically, is this something that might happen?
I can tell you the teacher's response. In fact, I got instructed this morning to share a teacher's perspective from my wife.
Great.
And I said, I don't think there's going to be a chance, honey, but she'll be thrilled to know that I was able to. She loved it. She loved the fact that it was 10 weeks on and a 2 week break, 10 weeks on, 2 weeks, and then you still got at the end, you still got a clump of 6 or 7 weeks. And she loved it. There was never any feeling of dread. Like she said this morning, she said, tell them that there was never a feeling like I have this morning where I just don't want to go to school for the last 6 weeks. She was fresher the whole time. She never felt exhausted like she does by the end of this year. She'll be worn down from just the especially the drag from March break through to the end of the year. So she loved it from a teaching perspective. I can't see, though, that there's the political will in Ontario anyways for a change towards this. There's too many industries and businesses and probably the union too doesn't want to see it happen.
Yeah.
But there already exists year-round schools in Ontario. I know that when my wife and I were living in the Toronto area, Peel District, which is just to the west of Toronto, they were starting year-round school, and we had talked about the fact that is that something we would be interested in as a family? Knowing that I was a camp person, it didn't really work out, because camp's not set around year-round schooling, right? Camp's set around the same school year. And so they exist. I know that I've read some articles about education reform in the States, but I'm not sure if Dan knows anything more about that. Have you read any of that, Dan?
I know a little bit about it. With the education reform right now, is the problem is that there's so much invested in testing. The incentive to do well on the test is so strong that teachers are basically shifting their whole curriculum to teach for this test. And so once the test is over, my wife just finished up with the English test for the sixth grade in New York State, and now she unofficially says, well, the rest of the year is just kind of whatever I want to do / fun things, you know, like almost to the point where like they kind of front load all this information for them to test. And then they spend the last few weeks kind of doing all the stuff that would kind of inspire them to learn more than just necessarily memorizing certain grammatical rules or whatever. Yeah, and then basically the summer happens. Then September, they're refreshing them of what they forgot over the summer. And then they are going right back into getting ready for the next test. But last week, I was actually in Newark, New Jersey with the Prudential Foundation. And they have a program. I can't remember it's the National Learning Active. I hate butchering the name because I sat for training all day long. But basically,
awesome.
It was a good training. If they're listening, the Prudential Foundation is basically rewarding grants in Newark, New Jersey, which has had a history of low socioeconomic status, is a history of struggle, to keep kids in school during their summer programs. So basically, what they're doing is they're trying to figure out ways to keep kids learning how to read during the summer programs. And if you could do that in your summer program or summer camp, they'll gladly fund your program a certain amount of money. And so there's a lot of programs I met last week where they, about 50 to 60 programs where they're going to be basically incorporating reading and somehow into their program. And they definitely value social growth, but they were just talking about if they just stuck to reading initiative, that they could really kind of get people through the door in that way and get their rates back up. But it's interesting in the States. There's definitely a lot of controversy. I feel like the same way where unions and businesses are so structured around having a summer that there would be such a push against it. But at the same point in time, I do know that, you know, that the talk definitely brings up a lot of discussion and the possibilities of what it could do for kids.
And North America is very connected to their summer because, you know, we do have – well, parts of North America does have a very strong winter. And so summer holds sort of a childhood-like, you know, image of, you know, fishing by the pond, you know, Huckleberry Finn, even though that doesn't exist really at all anymore. But we sort of like to cling to that and, you know, kids and youth and all of that. So just even, you know, the mindset of Canada and perhaps the U.S., you know, they like to just sort of fantasize about the summers and the summer days. And I don't know where in a government way, where this might be going, but in the sense of even looking at different, I know that on a little bit of the flip side, of course, parents are looking at how are camps not just helping my children on a social point, but also in a academic and even maybe athletic point. You know, with reading and with, you know, getting better physically for their gymnastic team or something like this. It's, they're wanting more out of the summer than just, you know, sort of the typical, you know, have fun during the summer.
That's something when, because I do get parents that look for that, and I'm very honest about, like, for instance, with sports, like, you know, we certainly do sports here, but I wouldn't say, you know, the best soccer player or the best football player or whatever is going to come out of our camp. You know, your child will instead learn how to play with each other and learn how to have fun and learn about team dynamics instead of actual skill. And
I've That's had a, boring.
Yeah,
That's
I know. Boring. I know. Well, it's not measurable as much as the
exactly.
skill part. But I've had families that say, okay, we are looking for that, and I recommend them other camps. But, you know, it's I completely understand that skill-based set, what they want to learn and continue to grow.
I just put a link up in the show notes to a blog post I did probably a few weeks ago about the benefits, year-round schooling benefits for summer camps, and it's really just a whole bunch of, I went out and collected a whole bunch of information and links to places where you could read up about pros and cons and yays and nays, and I just think the topic is something that it's almost something that we try not to discuss because we hope it doesn't happen. I really think that, you know, a few days after this post, I put up another post that was like one line that said, what's the first thing you would do if year-round schooling was announced tomorrow? You know, and as a camp, I think that's what we need to think about is, okay, well, what in our future vision, why not form partnerships with school boards? Are we matching curriculum? All of those things, so we can be a better prepared if it ever did happen.
It just keeps you sort of focused on the fact that your camp, regardless if schools are going to become year-round or whatever, you know, things do change. And you know, we do see parents more and more seeing, you know, how is this going to help my child academically? How is this going to help them on the sports team? We do, as camps, have to evolve and adapt. And it's just almost another training exercise to do that, making those links with the schools, seeing what parents are wanting to get out of our, you know, out of our camps. We are scared of change, and we do like our summers. It is something that you should sit down with your board or whoever you do sit down with and talk to your wife, your husband, you know, about where your camp is going and what's going outside, what's going on outside of your camp.
Yeah.
I also think part of the subject, you know, wasn't that foreign to me in the sense that, you know, where I work is it's a year-round camping, conferencing, education facility. So when there's not summer camp going on, we have kids here on field trips learning environmental education, which is really simple to do. It's just adapting what we do during the summer and just do it more into a class format and making sure we're following more of a curriculum. And then weekends where we have families up here on the weekends doing camp-like activities and going hiking and doing rock climbing and all arts and crafts and that sort of thing. So I think it's just learning to kind of go slightly on a more year-round basis with, and if you have a seasonal place, like, you know, only doing it for the months you could operate.
Hmm. Any final thoughts, Brother Dan?
I mean, I think at some point it's likely to happen and spread a little bit, but I tend to agree that in North America, especially with the heat of our summers, that unless schools were to invest in infrastructure to make sure every school had air conditioning, because I know a lot of the smaller summer ones or rural runs don't, it's going to be a long time before it becomes a reality for a lot of the country.
That's great. I think that's a good discussion. I'm sure we could come back to that in the future at some point. But it's good. Yeah, it's good to get it out there and talk about it. So, did anybody else have anything to add to the discussion? Or?
I'd love to hear what our listeners think about this topic and where they might think. You know, maybe somebody's in the loop somewhere. And knows what's going on in the school boards, you know, the trends and all that. I'd love to hear what our listeners think about this topic.
That's an excellent point. Great. Well, let's move on to our picks of the week, a tool that will make you a better camp director. So, Dan Weir, why don't you go first?
I picked two books by a teacher.
No, stop. Only one.
Oh no.
No, I'm just teasing. It's all good.
Well, he wrote both of them, so that's why I figured Maxwell, and they're pretty similar in the aspect. Now I'm saying every writer that writes a book is the exact same throughout all of them. But so basically, his name's Ron Clark. He presented at Tri-State ACA Camp Conference in 2008. He was the keynote. The one book is called The Essential 55, and it's award-winning educator rules for discovering the successful student in every child. And then the other book is The Excellent 11, Qualities Teachers and Parents Use to Motivate, Inspire, and Educate Children. And I like his books because they're very simple in the sense of, you know, they could easily be translated into trainings for our staff. And you could really kind of take some of the points he's saying and kind of easily kind of construe them into, you know, summer camp and into working with children. And a lot of it is just about etiquette and really about social skills that we really kind of want our kids to have, but sometimes miss out during the year while they're in school.
Excellent.
That's cool.
That's great.
They're both great reads.
Brother Dan?
Well, I have blockposters.com, a site I found one day when I was in New Zealand and I needed a banner that we didn't have, that didn't exist. And it was just a neat way to print. And, I mean, you got to tape it together when you're done, but a neat and easy way to print any kind of big poster size piece if you need it for a program or for a display board or for a banner as I needed. It worked really well. And then I just added another one since this is my only time ever probably going to be on the podcast. So the other Dan had two. I thought I should get two.
Yeah.
So jotform.com, which is claimed to be the easiest form builder on the web. And there's some limitations if you just use the free version around how many submissions you can have a month. But it was an easy way for me to set up registration form online for Camp Columba in New Zealand. And it worked really, really well. So
that's great.
There too.
Perfect.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Gabs.
I want to be called Sister Gabs.
Sister Gabs. So, but then at that point, we would need to go Brother Dan and Brother Dan 1. So,
and only one of us put up with Brother Joe for 17 years in the same bedroom and has earned the right to be called Brother Dan.
That's true.
I'm on 15 years. I'm getting there.
So my pick of the week is a craft. We've been using soapstones for quite a while at my camp, which is just basic, very soft stone that you can shape using sandpaper, different grades of sandpaper, and then you finish it off with a little bit of Vaseline, and it's really nice and shiny. But it's a craft that actually looks good when you're done, and you don't have to be that skilled at crafts. And I like to pack it with some of my campers that go on canoe trips. You know, it's rainy in the tent and they have something to do, and some of our home lonely campers. But it's a really neat craft, and I posted the link on the show notes for a place I thought was pretty inexpensive for this craft. So yeah, soapstones.
That's great. It looks great. Have you done it at camp?
Yeah. Yeah, we have. It's like there's always kids doing it. It doesn't seem to get old, and the stuff that they come up with is really impressive. And each stone has its own grain and its own color. And once you put some water on it and with the sandpaper, you really see the different colors that come out. And especially with international staff, international kids that come to your camp. It's just really neat that they go home with a soapstone, because that's very Canadian. Yeah, it's a really neat project.
That's awesome.
What is the cost? I don't see any prices on their site.
Oh yeah, well, so I'm not quite sure exactly. I know our prices that they give us, but I know that there's two things that you can order. You can order the pre-package, which is just a block of the soapstone, a little tub of Vaseline, like very tiny, and then the four grades of sandpaper. What we do now is we don't order the little packages. We order just a whole bunch of soapstone, which I think it's about $1 or something per chunk. And then we just buy the sandpaper ourselves and cut it up. And then we give it to the kids, and it's really inexpensive. And the parents are impressed too.
That's great. My pick of the week is overwhelming when you first go to it. It's called Sri Tips, and I'm not sure if anybody's had a chance to look at it, but this is a social media professor for Columbia University, Columbia Journalism School professor, this is his social media guide page. And so as you scroll down, there's like Facebook guides, you know, how to update Facebook policy, privacy, a guidebook to Facebook, the new Facebook, all of those things. And then there's Google Buzz, there's LinkedIn, there's Twitter guides. I love the Twitter guides is a Twitter guide for newbies and skeptics. My summer camp director was in today when I had up Hootsuite, which is the Twitter client I use on my computer. And she said, "Is that Twitter? I don't understand Twitter at all." And it's one of those things where this guide is... This is a great sort of one-stop shop for all of those Mashable articles, for all those things that you want to know about social media. So it's worth probably easily 10 hours of your life if you really want it to be. But
it looks really awesome.
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, what he's got is, you know, I love the title "Change Your Media Diet." He's like, okay, you need to read Mashable. Muckrack, which is, I didn't know, but the best way to find and follow journalists by Beat, by News, Lifehacker's on there, Read Write Web. This is a brilliant list, and I got it off of I'm a member of a LinkedIn group for not-for-profits, and this was put up as a link. Very useful, very helpful. So,
yeah. And this is something I get asked a lot of questions by friends asking for help with stuff, and definitely could easily refer to them because it has almost a tutorial for everything. It looks like
just never ends. Send them to that page. That is awesome.
No, I know what will happen. They'll say, "Well, can you water that down for me?" that's still too
much.
You have
to write a tutorial for the tutorial.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
How to read ScreenNet.
Yes. Yeah.
There you go.
That is awesome. Well, everybody, thanks for doing this this week's podcast. Let's give you some web plugs where we can find you online. So, Dan Weir, where can we find you?
I work for Frost Valley YMCA, which is frostvalley.org, And I blog on Camp Nation's blog, which is campnation.ca. And then I also blog at danlovescamp.com and Twitter at the same address of danlovescamp.
Perfect. Gab?
And I work for Camp Waro, which is waro.com. And I Twitter on Gabrielle Rell. And so you can follow me in both places.
Brother Dan.
Well, I'm at McGrail Farm Equipment, which is McGrails.com. I can satisfy all of your John Deere needs. And you can follow me on Twitter at Daniel N. Richards.
That's awesome. Well, me, I'm Joe Richards, and you can follow me at Yo-Yo Joe R. on Twitter. Or you can follow. You can see the Pierce Williams website at campisbetter.com. Campisbetter.com. So a couple of notes. Travis wasn't with us today, unfortunately. His grandmother passed away recently. So we give our condolences to Travis. A couple of reminders. The video contest for our kids ends on May 31st. So if you haven't entered a camp performance video, you can do that at Camp Nation. Or you can also go to facebook.com/ourkidsgotocamp and become a fan. They're trying to curate a list of camps, Facebook pages, and invite, if you want your Facebook page to be curated there, just to send them a message. And we, as always, need to thank the long-suffering sound and audio editor, Donovan Romanek, from whereitsatproductions.ca for taking care of all of the numerous files we send and putting those together. Thanks, everyone, for meeting up on Skype today. And to our listeners, thanks so much for downloading the Camp Nation podcast. You can find our show notes on campnation.ca. So have a great day, everybody.
All right. Well, take care.
Goodbye.
Bye.
This Camp Nation podcast was brought to you by Our Kids Go to Camp magazine and the camps.ca online summer camp directory. Thanks for listening.